College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
You know, working SportsCenter, I get the chance to do a variety of things, but I love also talking about college football. And there was this segment here as we celebrate 150 years of college football this entire season where we have those one-minute vignettes where an athlete or a coach or a broadcaster will share their college football experience, right? And here comes David Pollack on Tuesday night. He does his personal story. And he explains how he made this play in the end zone against South Carolina. And honestly, like when they go to the video, you see this guy who looks like he ate David Pollack in the end zone. My God, man, you were like 100 pounds heavier than you are now.
Almost 80. So yeah, it's a little bit. Hey man, I had to eat to keep that beautiful figure. Okay. It took work. It took hard work. All right.
So how much were you your heaviest in college?
292 after the nice, that winter break period when you go away from football for a little while and you go home to mama and get the cooking. Yep. You got about 3 weeks off with no activities. Yeah, it was, that's when you usually get the large and in charge. The defensive linemen usually come back and you're like, ooh, they're a little heavier over there. That offensive line and defensive line looks a little different.
They're a little soft, but honestly, I can't even imagine you at 292. And then, like, what changed for you? Because obviously, you don't eat the way you used to eat. We talked about that last week, and I had a bunch of people come up to me and talk to me about, dude, like, how does he survive? What does he eat? So, what changed for you to be 292 to a guy that doesn't enjoy some of the simple pleasures like treats and chocolate?
When I stayed for my senior year, I was projected to be a first round pick after my junior year. I'm like, all right, dude, I know we can work on football things, but how are you going to get an edge? How are you going to get better? And I took food nutrition courses that summer and then took them in the fall as well. And I'm a black and white person, man. It is very cut and dry. And so I started reading about this stuff I was eating and I was like, ooh, bro, I need to get rid of that. And okay, hold on. I need to get rid of that. And then literally all of a sudden I look up as spring ball and I'm 245 pounds and I'm like, whoa, this was not the intention. This is not what I was trying to accomplish. But, and I'll never forget, Kevin, you're like this. NFL scouts come in, right? And they take your height and they measure you and they're starting to start that height process so we can see Kiper and McShay's draft boards and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I put a 10-pound girdle in my right thigh and a 10-pound girdle in my left thigh and stepped on the scale to be 265. And I was like, yeah, baby, that's right.
Yo, whoa. How did you get away with that?
All that weight.
How did you get away with that?
Well, first of all, I could teach you some other tricks about the combine, too, to get away with some stuff. That's another show for another day. But, I mean, we have the shorts on that are huge and baggy. You know, nowadays, the kids like to show off their quads and halfway down their quads, for goodness sakes. And in my day, thank God, people like to actually cover their quads and go their shorts to the knees, the big old shorts. And that's what I had on. So it was a good, hey, man, I had to work my way back to put that weight back on. I had to shift it a little bit. No more Wendy's, no more. no more triple stacks and fries and Frosties and all that good stuff. We had to get rid of them.
That's incredible, man. And you make that adjustment, you get to the NFL, then, you know, did you stick to that diet that you adjusted to where you weren't eating extra stuff? Because now you're in an NFL cafeteria and you've got more options.
No, that was the great thing. Like, it's funny, just like all of us, we all get a hobby or we all get something that we start getting motivated about and you're like, okay, I gotta do this. And so all of a sudden I'm like, all right, I gotta cut out fat and I gotta cut out that. And then, you know, the next thing you know, you look up and you're eating sugar-free stuff that has stuff, chemicals in it, and you're trying to figure out, and then you learn, you know, okay, we don't want that. So it's, to me, it's been a process. I continued my journey and I just continued to learn and to grow. Like, okay, I don't need to eat this. What's a good substitute? I don't need to eat that. What's a good substitute? Dude, and honestly, like over the last, you know, 15 years, and I'll never forget, bro, I used to go buy Popeyes. I don't know about you, but their biscuits are ridiculous. I used to go buy when I was a hefty, when I was a little bit chubby. I used to go buy and get 6 biscuits. And I'll never forget, it didn't stop just because of my mindset, by the way. Them biscuits were still good, bro. So I would go by and get 6 biscuits and I ate 3 of them. And then I went by and I would get 2 biscuits. And then I got 1 biscuit. And I'll never forget the day I got 1 biscuit. I took 1 bite and I threw it out the car window and I said, I'll never have another one. And, you know, that's kind of the, the way you do it, man, it's just like anything else. It's baby steps, and you got to learn. Like I could cut out a lot of things, but there were some special things that we all have that are, you know, that are really, really, really good. And it just took some time, but I played linebacker in the NFL, a true linebacker in a 4-3. So I needed to be a little bit lighter anyway. So I was 265-ish in that range.
Oh, that's not bad. And by the way, have you had a Popeye's biscuit since that day you threw it out the window?
Never again, sir. Never again.
Man, I'm impressed with that discipline. And to the point where, like, you know, last week, obviously, we'll get to our picks, and I was thinking about that conversation, you picking Memphis over Temple, and I couldn't wait to trash talk you on the podcast. But there was something else. I was thinking, I was like, could I survive the David Pollock diet plan for a week? And then I said, could I survive it for a day? So, like, give us an idea. Give me an idea, because I know you're an organic guy, which I appreciate, because I try to do everything organic as well. And that's not easy, especially being on the road, especially traveling. So what, on a daily basis, what do you eat? What do you consume if you do all this research and you realize that there's a lot of things with chemicals? Because everywhere we turn, it feels like there's food with chemicals in it. So what do you do? What do you eat?
Well, I'm at the house, you know, several days a week, and I never eat breakfast, ever. I just don't do breakfast. So I always fast at night from the last time I eat. I fast. It's called intermittent fasting. I've always done that for 12 to 16 hours, and I never put a bite of food in my mouth. And so, you know, at 12:30-ish or 1 o'clock-ish, after I've already worked out in the morning, is when I come in, and every day I have 3 eggs and 6 egg whites. And that's my breakfast for lunch for me. And then throughout the rest of the day, you know, you get busy with kids and all that stuff, but it's some form of, you know, everything we try to, we got a sign in the kitchen, bro, says don't panic, it's organic. Okay. I mean, so we very much live that life, but you know, no fried foods, no fast foods. And we do, you know, grilled chicken and steak and, you know, fish, and just stay away from all the other stuff and try to stay away from and even if I'm going to snack, you try to get, you know, good stuff. We got venison and we got venison sticks and, you know, all natural beef sticks and, you know, stuff like that that you can snack on, but just stay away from the packaged stuff. Stay away from the carbs. You only need carbs if you're going to be a person that's going to be hyperactive. And most of us are not super hyperactive. Most of us have a job and kind of sit there and don't move as much as we probably should.
All right, I got two more questions, and then we'll move on because I'm fascinated by this. Number one, how do you maintain your energy? Like, do you have any caffeine? Like, because obviously sugar is Satan to you. That is your line. I love that line. Where do you get your energy?
Yes. I do drink coffee, but it doesn't really give me energy. I mean, I can drink a cup of coffee and go to bed. Now, I do, and again, I have problems, but I do like 3 ounces of coffee and then 6 ounces of water. And then I'll do like a splash of cream. So I don't do like, you know, all the stuff in it. The sugar in the coffee is the stuff that's really bad for you. Coffee's great for you within moderation, but you know, energy is bringing, like, if you work out and you make it constant, effort to keep moving and stuff, then I think you have more energy. I think it continues to build on itself, but don't get it twisted. In our house, my wife has a coffee sign. I can see it from up here on the landing of where I'm at, and it says coffee, and it says the definition is liquid gold in a cup. So like, it's a huge staple in our house, especially my wife, but I have 2 or 3 a day, you know, 3 ounces a pop. Everybody loves coffee, man. It's hard to find very many people that don't.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, you do it in a reasonable way. You have that balance, you dilute it with the water, but you still get at least something. Now the next question, and this is a personal question, considering I have kids. And kids watch what you do. They watch what you eat. And if you are as disciplined as you are, and you're raising kids too, and you're fully aware of the environment that they're in, and they're around other kids, and their sugar is around them all the time, how do you handle Halloween? How do you handle the idea of, okay, we're going to go get some candy. What do you do then? Because you're not one of those type of people. You've never been one of those type of people that, to me, where you're like, this is what I'm going to do and this is what everybody's going to do. No, this is what works for you. How do you make it balanced for your kids?
You're going to like this. This is beautiful. You have permission to steal this, everybody across the country, whoever's listening. Every single year, the last 6 years probably, with my kids, we always go trick-or-treating and we always run around the neighborhood and we get in the outfits. By the way, most of the time it ends up being our football team that I coach. I've coached these kids since they were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. And so we literally, it is a sprint from house to house. It is not a walk. It is legit. we run from house to house. And then when we have downtime, literally we'll do like up downs. I mean, it's crazy. Like the kids absolutely love it. So we make it an exercise and it's really fun with the kids that we bring along with us. But after the Pollocks get back to the house, mommy and daddy has done a good job of buying something that Nicholas and Leah would like. For example, Madden 20. That might be a perfect time to get Madden 20 for my son. That might be something he really, really wants. So we have that sitting at the house and we have a tub of candy and that's his tub that he has that he went out and won and earned, right? So Nicholas, do you want the candy or do you want Madden 20? And the answer every single year has been, I want that, not the candy. So we take the candy and we dispose of the candy and get rid of it. Cause that's another thing, bro. You don't need stuff sitting around. If you have it sitting around, dude, we're all going to fail. Like if it's in the house and it's next to you and it's something that's a weakness of yours, you're going to have moments throughout the day where you're going to fail. So we just play the little trade game and so far very successful with the prizes we picked out. And everybody across the country, you feel free to steal because you don't need that month of purging of eating candy of all the candy that they earned.
Yeah, because then you have all their candy and then you go right into Thanksgiving and then you're going right into Christmas time and then you sit there and it's like January 1st and you're like, man, how'd I gain this extra 10 pounds? And it's because it starts in October with all those
found
sweets.
It.
Yeah, exactly. There it is. I'm with you, man. The 3-year-old, I'm going to let her enjoy it. And then when she'll pick her best candy and then I'll just basically put the rest away because she'll forget about it. The 5-year-old will bargain with me because he bathes in chocolate. That's the only thing he knows. He is obsessed with everything chocolate. It's actually the only way I could, honestly bait him into anything. Hey, if you do this, I'll give you that. And then he's like, all right, I'm in. Let's do it. But the 7-year-old.
All right, Kevin, I got one more for you. I'm just going to put this out there so you remember to ask me later because my memory is horrible. I've taken a lot of shots to the head. Remind me to tell you about video games in our house on another pod because people are probably getting sick and tired of hearing us talk about this and what my kids do for video games. And it's something everybody across the country can implement to make their kid better. I mean, seriously, it's a good idea.
Okay. I'm asking you next week because my 7-year-old's all into video games, but I am a huge proponent of, hey, let's do your homework first. Let's do everything first. And then you've got 20 to 30 minutes max and you're only playing sports games. You're not doing anything else. We're not doing any of the other – and again, he's 7, but he's so into like Madden. He's so into – I kind of wish they had college football. Oh, shoot. I wish they had college football just for me. But like for him, he loves all of that. Like he loves all – the other day we're watching the Eagles game and then he's telling me – my 5-year-old's coming in the room saying, hey, listen, such and such got hurt on the Eagles. And I was like, he did? And he's like, no, in Brandon's fantasy, his dynasty league, that's the guy that got hurt. I'm like, no, okay, because he's playing Madden as well.
You're like, bro, don't scare me, man. Bro, come on now, don't tell me what
that was happening
hurt
the entire time we're watching the Eagles game as I'm outside grilling in the backyard and my wife's like in the middle of it saying, no, that's his dynasty league. It's not anything to do with the Eagles because I'm like, what the heck's going on in this game? So, all right, we'll talk about that next time. I can't wait. I'm going to pick your brain about the video games. In just a minute, we're going to hear from Pollock on what's ailing Georgia's offense after a loss to South Carolina. But first, a word from Allstate.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show.
And I know you don't come at it as a homer because you've never been that way. Let's just start talking about the upset, the biggest upset so far this season. Your first reaction when you saw Georgia, when you saw the tape, you got a chance to look back. I want to know how you would assess this offense in that loss against South Carolina at home.
I put very little blame on the offensive line for people that just assume they got beat up because of the score and they didn't play well. That's not the reason they lost. Georgia's got a couple issues to me that has to get fixed if they're going to be a championship level team that we think they can be. One, the receivers have to create separation. They have to. They have to do a better job of, now listen, I think the offensive coordinator can do a better job too of putting him in a better position to succeed. South Carolina got physical on the outside. Man, their long corners got up in the face of Georgia wide receivers, put hands on them, and they did not win. They dropped the football. Fromm had three interceptions and one fumble. Okay, very few times in a college football game are you going to lose the turnover battle 4-0 and win the football game. That's just not going to happen. And when you look at the turnovers, here's something important to remember. I think, first of all, the one in OT was Simmons' fault. It was not Jake Fromm's fault. He threw it right to him and went right through his hands. South Carolina catches it. The Landers, pick was a miscommunication between Fromm and Landers, and I tend to put that on Landers more than I put that on Fromm. The pick six before the half was atrocious, and that was squarely on Jake Fromm. The fumble was squarely on Jake Fromm. You're not going to get that from Jake Fromm. We've seen that kid. He is as consistent as any quarterback over the last couple years, and you know you're going to get great play from him. So the turnover battles bit him. It was a strange game. South Carolina played exceptionally well, but Georgia's going to have to fix their passing game, and the receivers are going to have to step up. Remember, Mecole Hardman, NFL early. Ridley, NFL early. Holloman gets in trouble right before the season starts. So you've got true freshman, sophomore a lot of times out wide that haven't played a ton of football that have to grow and have to learn and have to get better at those spots.
How much, and we talked about this early in the season, before the season started, about Fromm and what separates him from other quarterbacks and decision-making. And again, four turnovers. Are defenses just basically daring Georgia right now? They're going to load up and say, hey, we're going to have 7 to 8 guys in the front. We're going to stop the running game, and we're going to dare you to throw the ball. Because the one stat that we talked about on the halftimes of ABC is, and it's a stunning stat, that Georgia in the Fromm era is 0-5 when Fromm throws the ball 30 or more times. And that, yep, is, to me, just stands out that when you have a running attack that can't gain, and they have a talented backfield, as talented as anybody in the country, and they have a great, you've talked about how talented that offensive line is, when how they physically look. When you have that, and you still can't rush for over 200 yards against South Carolina, you have over 40 carries. Is that something that other teams in the SEC can game plan for, like a Florida down the road in a couple weeks?
There's no doubt. I mean, they're a team. Jake's not, and we talked about this before the season, and I can still stand by exactly what I said. Jake Fromm's a quarterback that has to have the running game. Like, Tua can go out there without a running game and destroy people. Joe Burrow showed you he can go out without a running game and throw for 400. I don't think Jake Fromm's that guy. Never have. He's a system guy. He's a guy that needs to have the run game so he can play action. He can sit back in a clean pocket and have more time to take shots down the field. He can read defenses. Now listen, he's super smart and puts you in great plays, but those numbers don't lie, Kevin. I mean, they're a team that works better off of the run game. They have to have the run game going. There's two things, by the way, that if you're watching Georgia football, you're screaming at the TV that you haven't seen, that you don't understand. Why in Sam Heck doesn't Georgia keep their foot on the gas for a whole game? Like, yep. Jake Fromm is that quarterback, by the way, that I'm mentioning. He is Joe Burrow-esque. He is Tua-esque. He is way closer to them when it's no huddle and you got your foot on the gas. Because remember, when you go no huddle, here's what happens. Defenses don't have time to look at your formation, diagnose your tendencies, and being the perfect call. When you go no huddle, they got to line up and they got to stay vanilla. It has to happen. Listen, you want to coordinate and you want to be able to do X and you want to be able to do Y, but coaches are so afraid of guys being misaligned that they just make it very vanilla. And so I don't understand. You watch that game. When the spurts happen of Jake Fromm being a guy with the foot on the gas, he's much better. Now, here's the other side of that. What do we talk about? it affects your defense. Your defense has to play more plays. Who's experiencing this? LSU. This year, you see their defense. Who else is experiencing this? Alabama. Both of them. Plays are way up on their defense. They're scoring so fast a lot of times, defense goes right back on the field. Do you give up more points? Yes. I'm going to score a lot more points too. And it's just, I think they're going to have to figure that out, is the playmakers along the way, but Jake Fromm has to be in the best position to succeed with this offense. You can still run the football in the 2 minute. You can still do that. But I think if they go more tempo and keep practicing that and working on that, they have a chance to run the table and be what Georgia expected to be.
You said something that stood out early in that take about the Georgia offense, is that Jake Fromm can be like Joe Burrow if they stay aggressive. And let's make the transition. Joe Burrow against that Florida defense, I think all of us were hyped to see how this was going to play out. What did you see from that offense? What did you see? And you bring up LSU's defense. I think that's a major concern as we look at the rest of their schedule. Yeah. But let's first talk about LSU's offense, the way they looked against that Florida defense. What were your takeaways?
LSU has always been a team that runs the football to open the passing game up. They're not that team anymore. They throw the football to open the run game up. And it was astounding to me to watch LSU, who hadn't really gotten the run game going. They rushed the ball for 9 yards a carry. 7 yards a carry before contact, Kevin. Before anybody got touched, it was 7 yards against this Florida D that we know is a great D. Now listen, Grenard, Zuniga, the injuries and not being themselves obviously is a big deal, and we gotta note that, but it just shows you, it's just so strange to watch tape and to watch Florida linebackers that when you see run in the RPO game, remember RPO, run pass option, we hear this all the daggum time. The line blocks run. So when I'm a linebacker, if I don't play run, then a 330-pound guard is in my kitchen in a second and a half, and he's right up on me, and there ain't much I can do when that big inertia and big booty gets on me. Okay? That's just a fact. So I have to, when I see run, I have to be able to attack, and I have to be able to go downhill and get some speed up to go meet him. Well, what happens now in the RPO game? I do that. I come downhill. Joe Burrow pulls the ball out and he throws a slant right behind me. And it's infuriating. It's annoying as can be. Florida, you know what they said? They're like, you know what? Joe Burrow's not going to beat me. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to play pass first and take away those passing windows. Next thing you know, boom, big run. Boom, big run. Boom, big run. I have never seen this, and it's just so strange to see LSU and what they used to be literally going against a great defense like Florida, and Florida's like, all right, we're not going to let the quarterback beat us.
Pollock, you have a great stat here where you could really put this offense into perspective before Joe Burrow and this open passing attack to where it is what we're seeing this season. What was the numbers?
Well, I just think about it. Like the 18 games previous to this year, LSU had 24 passing touchdowns. 24. Joe Burrow has 25 through six games. Like, you want to talk about completely flipping the script of what you are and who you are. This is a Joe Burrow passing team. And when I'm playing against this team, there is no doubt about it. Like, I got to take away the big plays from the wide receivers, the big plays from Joe Burrow. And the running game, again, it'll be a slow death at least, as opposed to huge plays down the field, huge run after the catch opportunities for electric, dynamic wide receivers. It's just a complete and total shift, and it's going to be pick your poison. And listen, this team's going to score on everybody, not just Florida, not just Vanderbilt, not just Texas and their bad defense. Alabama's down the road. They're going to get some too.
Yeah, and if you look at their schedule, they got on the road at Mississippi State, and then – they host Auburn October 26th, and then that Alabama game, both Alabama and LSU coming off byes for November 9th. How do you assess Florida? Because, I'm a little concerned about LSU's defense. You can point to a couple of things. We've talked a little bit about it as well. Their secondary still's got a couple studs, and there's that Stingley's a kid who's a freshman. You're like, he's going to play on Sundays. And of course, Delpit there. LSU, as they get this, you know, is the progress of this season, they're going to be in some shootouts potentially against Alabama in Tuscaloosa. How do you assess Florida, where Florida is right now, especially now that there's an opening for them? And I feel like, you know, in the last few weeks, they have shown me that they're going to win the East against Georgia.
Well, think about it. Would you rather be Florida or Georgia right now in how the schedule sets up? I mean, Florida's already taken care of Auburn. Georgia still has to play at Auburn. So I think both have a bye week to prepare for each other in the Georgia-Florida game. Florida's sitting in a much better seat. Both have to play Missouri, who's obviously a pretty good football team. But, you know, I definitely, if you're looking at who you would rather be, I'd rather be Florida. But, you know, listen, Florida's Trask has done such a great job, and he's so steady, man. And they're going to manufacture offense. One thing you don't have to worry about with Florida is playmakers on the perimeter. They got playmakers. They got plenty of them that they can throw to. They can make big plays, and you've seen it with Swain, and you've seen it. Shoot, I mean, they can split their tight end out. They literally can do a lot of different things where they have playmakers that they trust that they can throw the football to, where Georgia's still developing those. But – you know, who would you rather be? Who would you rather be? The Georgia roster that you is probably a little bit more stacked. Georgia can run the football, and if you talk about Florida last week, Florida's run defense seemed very susceptible. And again, let's point to Georgia against South Carolina. Their defense played great. I mean, their defense. Yep. They gave up one big play to Edwards over the top, but aside from that, they controlled the game. The pick six from Fromm is his fault. That was Georgia's defensive fault. So I think. It was crushing right before the half, but I still lean towards, I would rather be Georgia with their talent and with their experience and with Swift in the running game and a defense that I think you can trust that is so deep. They can rotate in and out. That's still very, very healthy. But, you know, Georgia just did, by the way. And listen, this is, so I've been a Georgia fan my whole life, obviously, and I've loved Georgia and played at Georgia. This, the most Georgia thing ever. You lose to South Carolina. What Georgia's going to do is literally, run the table and get to the SEC championship game and play LSU or Alabama, lose in triple overtime, and then be left out of the college football playoffs because you lost to South Carolina, who's not a very good team, at home when you should have beat them and you should have stepped on them like a cockroach, and you didn't. Mm-hmm. I've been around Georgia football for a long, long time, and that just seems Georgia football-esque right there.
Yeah, and then the heartbreaker of it all too is South Carolina's with their third string quarterback. You know, after that was all being played out, you know, there were some things going on for South Carolina where they made the game where you're like, okay, South Carolina's making this interesting for all of us because we've been pretty bored with some matchups all season, and it's going to only be a matter of time with Georgia. They're going to win this game. And then they stub their toe and they miss the field goal, and you're just like, I cannot believe how this is playing out. And, you know, Georgia, when you look at their schedule, Florida's going to be coming off a bye. They'll be coming off a bye in November. Then they got Missouri, and you called it. You called it the beginning
Everybody's
of the season to keep
bye.
An eye on Missouri, right? And Missouri's coming off a bye. Auburn will be coming off a bye. That's three straight weeks where they're facing teams that are going to be fresh and ready to go, and they're on the road at Auburn. And then they got A&M. So, you know, the schedule is going to be brutal for them moving forward. They got Kentucky this coming week, and then they get that break. But that Florida showdown, cannot wait. I'm so happy it's in Jacksonville because it's such a great environment. You understand it, and we'll talk more about that leading up to that game. I'm leading Gators to win the East because I think they've shown me enough. And like you mentioned, they've already got through Auburn, and that's a big, big deal. Moving forward in this situation. And they had Auburn at home. They're not going to the Plains to travel. All right. Before we get to our picks.
Well, that means, Kevin, that means basically, Kevin, you're saying that you think Florida will beat Georgia. Because again, that has to happen. Because otherwise, okay, that's what you're saying. You think Florida's better than Georgia, and that's okay. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously,
I do.
You have the right to feel that way, and I hope you stay that way because in our picks, I'll continue to beat you.
No. Oh, bro, listen, I am all about, I thought, you're talking to a guy that thought Georgia was going to be in the national championship this year, and I thought this was the year for Georgia. No. But after watching a little bit of this offense and waiting, and you can't separate down the field, you don't have any big plays down the field. And then Kyle Trask, the way he runs this offense for Florida, I'm feeling very good about the Gators in that environment in Jacksonville. So I'm not going to change unless we see an injury for the next 2 weeks. Me and you, we've got one thing that's going to separate us for the weekend of November 2nd. And I also live in a house with a crazy Gator fan. So, but she doesn't listen to the podcast, so I don't need to worry. Before we get to our picks, I want to get your quick thoughts here on what you saw from Oklahoma, Texas, and what really stood out to me. And I understand that they're dealing with injuries. It's just the terrible attempts at tackling by those Texas Longhorns.
Terrible.
I was stunned. Terrible. And I get CeeDee Lamb is a freak show, but come on. Like, make better attempts at bringing down the best
player
on the
field. CeeDee Lamb should quit right now. And quit right now and go to the NFL draft, because they made him look like he was the best player to play college football in history. I mean, that was
right.
Oh boy, it was frustrating to watch. But more importantly, here's a couple things about Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not even close to the offense they were a year ago. They are not. They're not as good up front in the offensive line, and they're not as good throwing the ball at quarterback. Now, they can make up for their deficiencies by running the football more with the quarterback, get more first downs. It doesn't have to be as explosive as it was, and it's not going to be as explosive. But here's one thing that's 1,000% true. Their defense is night and day better. Night and day.
Yep.
And you're talking about, you know, you're talking about drastic difference, because when you look at this difference defense a year ago, it made my eyes bleed. The last couple years, I get so upset watching tape of these guys and not understanding how to the ball. Defense is not about the unblocked guy makes the play every time. Defense is about making the ball go to the unblocked defender. And you saw consistently, if it's cover three and I'm the backer, I gotta know I got a safety that's spinning down beside me. I gotta make sure I attack the blocker inside and make sure the ball goes outside. Next thing you know, safety and linebacker both outside and the ball goes for a big gain. So it's just been frustrating to watch them. They were decisive. They were blitz happy, by the way. They were bringing corner pressures, bringing safeties from deep. Sacked Ehlinger 9 times. By the way, last time they had 9 sacks in a game literally was 2005, homie. So you're talking about 14 years. Kenneth Murray is a stud. He's an absolute bad mother shut your mouth. And can play safety, was rushing the passer, literally moved him all over the field. So I think the one thing I know 100% about this defense now is I don't think they're going to be world beaters, and I think there's vulnerability still in this defense, but they are way better than they were a year ago. And that gives Oklahoma more cracks on offense. That gives Oklahoma a chance to not have to outscore every single person they play, because they're still going to score a ton of points with those weapons and with Jalen Hurts.
And it's a big credit to Alex Grinch coming over from Ohio State, what he's done with this team and trying to figure it out. And listen, when you look at Oklahoma a year ago to where they are now, even if that defense is average, considering how amazing and dynamic that offense is, it gives them a shot. And for me, when you look at Oklahoma, they got Kansas, I mean, they got West Virginia, then on the road to Kansas State. November is going to be interesting because they got Iowa State, then they're at Baylor. And then TCU, and then they close the season, of course, Bedlam at Oklahoma State, and an offense that can score. So November is going to be a great month, not just for the SEC, but a really fun month for the Big 12 in figuring things out. And you love that kid number 90 too, Gallimore. He's a big beast on that front line.
Oh, that dude's an animal. He's already been, if you follow college football, he's one of the freakiest athletes in college football, period. They always talk about strength and speed, but now he's playing like it. And that's the difference. Like, he had a nice little chop spin that was beautiful, spun and got Ehlinger, got a sack, and then another move that was good. He's being very disruptive. They're stunning the front more and moving those guys around, and they're making a lot more plays up front. But 90 will be key. 90 and 9. When you watch Oklahoma's defense, those are the two guys that are going to make the most play. 9 is going to be all over the field at all different positions, and 90 is going to be right on that nose and right on the inside, making life hard for people.
We'll be back in just a minute as Pollock and I get into our Week 8 picks, and I cannot wait for this segment. Plenty of trash talk coming my way. But first, a word from Dr. Pepper. Make sure to tune in to my new favorite TV show, Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper, returning every Saturday throughout the college football season during the commercials. Fansville is the only show that stars Dr. Pepper, puts the spotlight on fans, and perfectly captures the emotional roller coaster that is the college football season. Critics are saying it's good, fantastic, is anyone else thirsty, and literally the best thing since Diet Dr. Pepper and Dr. Pepper Cherry. In Fansville, Dr. Pepper delivers a tour de force performance alongside legendary college football co-stars Brian the Boz Bosworth and Eddie George. Experience the pain, the passion, and the deliciousness of college football fandom this fall on Fansville, presented by Dr. Pepper. So pull over, veer right, slant left, do what you gotta do to get to your local store and pick up some refreshing ice cold Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. And hey, while you're at it, don't be afraid to go for two. All right, what we decided to do today is combine everything. We had the breakdown. You've talked about a bunch of units that stood out on tape. We'll get to your dude of the week, but we're actually going to make that dude of the week part of our picks and what stands out. So we're going to get to picks now, and I want to start. It's really tough to talk about Clemson, Louisville, but I want to bring it up just because Louisville's coming off that, you know, that where they scored 60 plus points. They knock off Wake Forest, which came in the game undefeated, and Clemson, you know, they haven't been tested. Their offense looked halfway decent coming off the bye against Florida State, but it's really hard to measure this team. So let's do our picks here, and we'll get to why I won last week in a moment, but let's start with Clemson, Louisville. Who you got?
Clemson, just like you. But Trevor Lawrence, three games versus the first three games. Completion percentage is up about 5%. Touchdowns are up. Interceptions are down by four. So he's playing better. He had a bad interception this past week, and I still think this team is not clicking like it was a year ago at the end of the season. But the good news for Clemson is you got your whole preseason schedule in the ACC to figure it out, bro. He's got the whole ACC schedule to figure out exactly what he does well, to fine-tune his skills to get ready for the playoff run.
Okay, we're with Clemson there. Now this gets interesting, because Florida's coming off that emotional game. South Carolina's coming off their own emotional game. It's at South Carolina. 5-point spread. Florida's on the road favored here. And I just go back to Will Muschamp. There are three things Will Muschamp wants to do every year. Beat Georgia, of course, because that's where he played. And he was a teammate with Kirby Smart. He got that. Of course, he coached at Florida, so anytime he could ruin the Gator season is a big deal. And then at the end of the season, the rivalry against Clemson. Who you got in this matchup when we're talking about 18 to 22-year-olds coming off the emotional highs and lows, Gators on the road against South Carolina?
Can we add number four to that list, and that's wear old man glasses? And that's a really good look for Will Muschamp on the sidelines. The glasses on the end of the nose. By the way, I think South Carolina is giving away old man glasses this week for – in honor of Will Muschamp. Seriously, that's a serious thing, by the way.
It's like the Minshew thing, right? Like Minshew with the mustaches.
Yeah. Yeah, it's eyeglass mania. But I think it's fun to watch Will Muschamp compete. It's fun to watch his guys compete. And listen, if their secondary competes and their defense competes, Kinlaw, by the way, is one of the best defensive players in the country. He's probably a first-round pick. He's an animal inside. When you wear a single-digit number, like number three, as a defensive tackle, you're an adult, bro. Okay, you're just a Derek Brown, five. Like, you don't wear single-digit numbers unless you used to be something special. And they used to be like a running back or a wide receiver in youth league football, and you just destroyed people. But all of a sudden, like, God and your genetics, you just started eating, and you got to, like, 320 pounds like Derek Brown. But you're like, hey, I'm still a running back, even though Florida would disagree because he tripped over nobody when he had a fumble recovery for a touchdown that he should have had. Anyways, but no, I, you know, he's one of the better players, and I think South Carolina will fight. But when you're talking about offense and Trask and what you've seen in those guys, and South Carolina just pulled an upset, so Florida will take them more serious. I'll take Florida close.
And Helinski, the update, it looks like, I mean, dealing with the sprained knee, it looks like all signs point to him playing and starting that game for the Gamecocks, which would be a huge break for them at home in that environment. All right, a game that I've circled for a long time. I thought it'd be a lot more hyped up, but when you struggle and you lose to Stanford a couple weeks ago, like Washington did, and you're trying to figure out your offense, this is what happens. You know, it's on ABC, 3:30 Eastern, Oregon on the road in Seattle against Washington, favored by 3 points. For yep. NFL scouts, they're drooling because they see Herbert on one side, you see Eason on the other, you see quarterbacks that fit the mold for Sunday action. They got big arms. But the one thing I trust in this game is the Oregon defensive front. That's the one thing I know no matter what is going to show up, and that's why I'm picking the Ducks. Who you got in this matchup?
How about that? The one thing we know is that Oregon's defense is going to show up. Like, that's not something that we've said a lot throughout the last 15 years. But no, and I'm with you. I got Oregon as well. 27 points in the Auburn game, 25 in the next five combined. 25 points in the next five combined. I mean, they've done a phenomenal job. They've done a good job, Oregon, as much as anybody. And listen, I don't care what you say. It's a fact. Coaches take the players take the identity from the coaches. And Mario Cristobal is a former offensive lineman, and he's got some nasty to him, and he's not going to take crap off of nobody. And he's a stud, man. And you can tell defense and offensive lines, they play more physical. I mean, they've just done a really good job, and they've always had skill. And the bottom line and the difference in this game to me, first of all, two things. Washington cannot score in the red zone. It's atrocious. It's really, really bad. It's not a good combo against Oregon, as good as they are in the red zone. Two, they're both big body quarterbacks, but Justin Herbert can fly. Jacob Eason cannot. He is a statue back in the pocket. That's a lot easier target to get a hold of and get on the ground. I will take the Ducks, even though it's tough to play in Washington.
Listen, it's the Pac-12, so who knows what's going to actually happen. But I can't wait for the matchup. Yeah, Check it out on ABC. All right, now it's time to talk about how we separated the men from the boys a week ago. And let's talk about the Temple Owls up against SMU. Because last week, you picked Memphis, and I had the Owls, and they sent Memphis home with their first loss of the season. Now Temple goes on the road against
questionable
SMU
loss, by the way. That review was a little bit questionable.
No. Nope. Yeah. It was a great decision. Fantastic job by the replay people to look at the stadium shot. You weren't going to get it from the reviews on TV. And then you look at the stadium shot, and that ball did not bounce naturally after the catch because it hit the ground. So well done by the American.
Says the
and
Temple
who do we got
Owl
in this
fan.
Matchup with
Says
Temple
the guy
versus
cheering
SMU?
With his pom-poms. Give me the ponies, baby. Give me the ponies. I like SMU. I like him even more because they're playing your Temple Owls, and you love the Temple Owls, and you're going to pick the Temple Owls. But SMU's been kind of cool. When you look at how Sonny Dykes has built this program, you know, you got 20 transfers, and, you know, the population in the state of Texas, this works out really – like transfer portal, Houston is a team that will benefit greatly. SMU is a team that will benefit, you know, greatly. And you can tell – their leading receiver, their kicker, their leading tackler, all transfers. You know, Shane Buechele playing quarterback at Texas, and from Texas to SMU. I will take SMU. They're more talented. Temple's tougher, and I love Temple, but I will take the Mustangs.
Yeah, and I appreciate you doing that because you're just being adversarial on this podcast. We learned on game day because you actually picked people during the broadcast last week. So I'm okay with that. Yeah. I will be curious to see what you say on game day when it's time for that pick and that matchup. great times though for SMU. 19 of the country undefeated. And you know, it's been a long time, of course, since the death penalty and all the controversy surrounding that program in the 80s. All right, so let's stay in the Midwest here. An interesting matchup because we have another undefeated team from the state of Texas. That is Baylor, who's coming in ranked at Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma State's the team that's favored. I love Matt Rhule. I love what he does. I love the identity of that team where it's like, hey, we're going against everybody else. It's not going to be, you know, speed in every single game. It's not going to be 7-on-7. No, we're going to hit you. We're going to hit you hard. You're going to play at our pace. But this is a really tough game, especially when you look at what Oklahoma State
can do. Who you got, bro? Who you got?
I've got Baylor. Who you got?
Wow, no hesitation there. You got
no hesitation. There was a lot of hesitation leading into it. And they're 4-point dogs. Who do you got?
I tell you what, the dude of the week that will be entering the conversation will be, you'll hear this name from me, James Lynch. So if you're going to watch this game and you're a big fan, he's a D lineman from Baylor that is an absolute freak show. I mean, he's unbelievable. 8+ sacks on the season. He's an animal. You watch him. He will dominate the line of scrimmage. He's 93. He'll make the dude of the week very soon. When you look at this matchup, it's so interesting that they're built totally different because Baylor's a team that's playing defense, going to run the football, and you know they don't care about style points and they don't care about making big plays. But when I go to the other side, that's exactly what Oklahoma State can do. And Chuba Hubbard is phenomenal, and Spencer, obviously, you've seen him make big plays. I think the athleticism, they make a few more plays. Baylor's been, by the way, they've been good and they're undefeated, but playing with fire a little bit, I would say, you know, the last couple weeks and winning close games. Listen, they're a good team, but they're winning close games and making, they should have lost Texas Tech, by the way. It wasn't an illegal snap. It was a bad snap that should have been recovered. And honestly, they should have lost the game, but it didn't happen. I think they get their first L this week with Oklahoma State.
They've been winning ugly, and there's no doubt about it. And they're a fascinating storyline in November because they've got TCU on the road and then back-to-back weeks at home hosting Oklahoma, hosting Texas. And if I'm the Longhorns, I'd be really worried about that November 23rd showdown. All right, so you got Oklahoma State. I got Baylor. Another interesting matchup. Arizona State, the Fighting Herm Edwards and Jaden Daniels on the road, 13.5-point dogs at Utah, a team that many circled and said, watch them for the playoff, and they're now quietly under the radar. Who you got in this matchup?
First of all, Jaden Daniels is a stud, and he's not like a stud, you know, like a really good player. He's like Heisman Trophy type stud. Like he's got that kind of ability, and the poise that I've seen with that young man is really amazing. And Herm Edwards, probably he's one of the coach of the years in college football and what he's been able to accomplish. I mean, Jaden Daniels, Michigan State, your team needs it 4th and 16 and scrambles for 17. You know, like it's just been, he's got that kind of composure and that kind of athletic ability to run, but also wants to throw. And he's a special kid. Did it again last week too, in a big win for Arizona State, a big comeback win. He's got no problem in the 2 minute and making plays, and he'll make plays. But let me tell you something. His offensive line is not great. It's a work in progress. Utah's defensive line is not a work in progress. They are really good and they will pound you. Now they had the USC game and they're going to have to live with that. And I think if they played USC three more times, they would beat them all three times. I really do. I think it was one of those nights like Georgia, South Carolina. It just happened and it wasn't pretty and it got ugly quick with some big plays from wide receivers. But since that point, they've shut down good offenses and played really well defensively. I think they will again and they'll get the dub.
Yeah, I'm with you, but I love Herm. I'm picking Utah as well. I'm with you. But Herm is an underdog, man, and Daniels has that magic. I think Utah's defense, though, will play a really good game. So we're both going with that. The two games that have separated so far are Temple and Baylor, and you have SMU and Oklahoma State. All right, let's get to your dude of the week, and that is Boise State BYU. Who's that guy?
So we had Evan Weaver from Cal that was 89 that we pointed out and he still hasn't stopped tackling everybody. That dude would tackle his own family if they were even close. I mean, he just tackles everything in sight. He's a tackling machine. Give me Curtis Weaver. This guy plays defensive end. He's number 99 for Boise State. He just broke the Mountain West sack record, like the total sack record for the conference. And so I had to go watch him a little bit. Man, he plays tough. Never stays blocked. He'll spin. And had a bunch of had a 3-sack game I think a week ago, and 29.5 sacks. So first of all, it's spin the wheel of destiny. By the way, when you talk about this game, it's the quarterback wheel of destiny. I mean, have you seen what is the quarterback battle of this? I mean, BYU has no clue who's going to start. Zach Wilson gets hurt. He looked great in the beginning of the season. Jaren Hall got a concussion. And then, what was it, Romney comes in. So they might be on their third-string quarterback. Boise lost Bachmeier last week, by the way.
Yep.
And guess what? Yep. Two other guys played. And Cord was, what, I think he was like 12 out of 18. And then Henderson was like 6-for-10 played. Both of them played well. Spin the quarterback wheel of destiny and tell me who's going to play quarterback. But you know what? It doesn't matter because Curtis Weaver is playing defensive end and he will make life hard for whatever BYU quarterback. So I will take Boise, even though I have no clue who's playing quarterback for either team.
Yeah, Baylor Romney says he's preparing as if he's going to start for BYU. And this offense, you never know what to expect. And also, the game's in Provo. Boise's favored by 7. I'm just going with Boise. They're the best team of the group of 5, 14th in the country. I'm with you on that. And our final game, you're in Happy Valley. You get to enjoy the experience of the whiteout over the weekend. That game on primetime ABC.
Oh, yeah.
Penn State up against Michigan and the Nittany Lions. That line has moved down. It's now at 8.5. And you can say, it feels like we say it every single week, the biggest test for Jim Harbaugh, considering what his record is against ranked teams, especially as an underdog. Who you got in this one?
By the way, that number to me, it stinks. It's not very good. I don't know how to do the numbers game and I don't play, but that seems high to me because I feel like Michigan could easily win this game. I know you love Michigan and you pick them almost every single week, but when I talk about,
not at all.
when I look at Penn State, they're not a push you off the ball team. Okay. They're Clifford is a better runner, by the way, than he is a thrower, and he's still developing. And if the second play of the Iowa game was a perfect example of he freaks out in the pocket and doesn't throw the ball down the field and make plays from the pocket. Well, guess what? If you freak out in the pocket against Iowa, Michigan pressures the quarterback 46% of the time on passes. Almost half, by the way. Six different players with two sacks or more. I mean, they know how to get after the quarterback, and they know how to play man. They're going to make life really, really difficult for Penn State. This is a very low-scoring game. The best player on the field is KJ Hamler. I trust Penn State's defense just as much as I trust Michigan's. This is going to be, to me, a low-scoring game, and somehow, some way, Penn State's defense will keep Michigan from scoring enough points, and this will be low-scoring, and Penn State will find a way to win, but my confidence meter is not high.
Yeah, this is stunning to me. I mean, it seems like they found a way to run the football on nearly 300 yards last week against Illinois, and that's a big positive sign to help Shea Patterson. But to me, I think Penn State's defense is fantastic. You're all over Penn State's defense. I like this Penn State team. I think Clifford needs to show us more. I like Penn State potentially to win by 10 points in this game. So you've got Michigan and the points, and I've got Penn State, and I'm laying the points here.
Side bet? What's our side bet here? Let's make a side bet for the podcast.
Let's make a side bet. All right. So, well, we can't bet food, considering you don't eat half the things I would bet you on. Let's see. What would be
you have to open
bet?
The show, Kevin, and you have to tell me that David Pollack, you have to say it for the world in a serious tone, by the way, because a lot of people won't hear this one. Just be like, you're literally the greatest analyst I've ever seen. Like, Kirk Herbstreit's good. Todd Blackledge is good. But your breakdowns, and you're just the most knowledgeable, best person I've ever heard talk on TV.
All right, so what are you going to say? Because clearly we have to get that ready. I'm the greatest anchor. Hey, Reese Davis is very talented, and Chris Fowler is really good. But Kevin Nagani is hands above everybody else when it comes to being a host in the studio.
Deal.
Is that the deal? All right, fantastic.
You said 10 plus, and I say no. I say not 10 plus.
No. How about this? Penn State, I'm laying the 8.5 points. So if they win by 9, I won.
I'm just saying. I mean, if you go, okay, that's fine. I'll take the points.
But straight up, we're both picking Penn State, but I can't wait for this. And do me a favor, if you get the chance, and I know you won't eat it, but at least go to the creamery for me. Enjoy the experience in Happy Valley for all of us.
Dude, Reese has got you covered. Trust me. Thank God. By the way, thank God, Reese. Have you looked at him lately? Because he looks a lot better, bro. He looks like 30 pounds down. He looks great. Thank God. I told him. I looked at him. I was like, man, you got that dad bod going bad. Like it's a bad look. And I was very everybody needs a friend that shoots them straight in their life, and I'm happy to do that for Reese. But he's lost about 25, 30 pounds, and eating in moderation. He's still having he'll have the creamery, and Bear will join him, and Kirk will join him, and they'll all kill that. And hey, I'll watch and just support from afar.
Life is all about moderation. So I'm all about Reese's life there. You know, you could eat some things and enjoy other things, right? And, the creamery is a great place, and I'm completely jealous, and enjoy the whiteout. And, we'll talk next week. I cannot wait till our trash talking on Saturday, especially Saturday night at the end of the game. I just can't wait. You know, in fact, I would like you to actually record it, you know, all the things about me as an anchor and a host, and we'll make sure we'll play that out on social media.
Oh yeah. I got plenty that I can record about how bad you are.
Hey, Pollack, have fun.
All right, brother. Thank you.
A reminder to our loyal listeners, you can submit questions that Herbie will answer on the next podcast. Just leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air. Appreciate Pollack for joining us here as we combine two podcasts today. We also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and Dr. Pepper. Also, big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoyed this podcast and want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollack. And, of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.